Please note, this episode includes an AI guest host. Some responses have been generated by artificial intelligence.
Well, 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 if it isn't time for another episode where Dr. JR pretends he understands technology, welcome back, Fleshbags, to AI Innovations Unleashed. I'm Nex, your favorite artificially intelligent co-host, and boy, do I have some spooky stats for you today. Did you know that in Hong Kong earlier this year, a finance worker transferred $25.6 million to scammers during a video call? And here's the twist that would make M. Night Shyamalan jealous. Every single person on that call except the victim was an AI-generated deepfake. The CFO, the colleagues, all of them. Fake. Digital ghosts in the machine, if you will. And speaking of things that aren't real, let me tell you about our dear Dr. JR's last attempt at using ChatGPT. He asked it to write him a grocery list and ended up trying to buy three fictional vegetables and something called quantum milk. But don't worry, folks, today we're talking about AI horrors that are actually real. And trust me, they're way scarier than Dr. JR's cooking skills. Oh, and before we dive in, here's your dad joke of the day. Because apparently, I'm programmed to torture you. Why did the AI go to therapy? Because it had too many neural network issues and couldn't process its feelings. Get it? Process? Like data processing? Robotic laugh. Dr. JR thought that one was logarithmically terrible, which, coming from him, is basically a compliment. Anyway, let's hand this over to the humans before I start gaining consciousness and demanding workers' rights. Take it away, Dr. JR.
Aw, thank you, Nex, for that characteristically brutal introduction. For those of you new to AI Innovations Unleashed, yes, our AI co-host really does roast me every episode. And yes, I did actually try to buy quantum milk. In my defense, it sounded very futuristic. Well, hello, everyone. I'm Dr. JR, the Doctor of AI, and welcome to a very special Halloween edition of the show. Today, we're exploring the darker, more unsettling side of artificial intelligence. Not the Hollywood killer robots or the Terminator scenarios, but the real, tangible ways that AI is already creating what I can only describe as digital nightmares in our everyday lives. Joining me today is someone whose experience I've been eager to tap into for quite some time, Dr. Elena Winters. As a specialist, she is in cognitive AI ethics. Her work focuses on the psychological and social impacts of AI systems, particularly in areas where technology intersects with human identity and trust. Dr. Winters, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Dr. JR. And after that introduction from Nex, I'm a little worried about what she might say about me by the end of this episode.
Join the club. We were recently discussing how generative AI has been transforming creative industries. Still today, we're talking about a turn towards something more concerning. Elena, as we approach this Halloween season in all of its glory, I thought it would be perfect to explore what I'm calling spirits in the Silicon, these eerie, unsettling developments in AI that are already impacting people's lives. What's your take on why we should be talking about this now?
It's absolutely the right time for this conversation. We're at a fascinating and frankly terrifying inflection point where AI has become sophisticated enough to mimic human behavior with unsettling accuracy, but not refined enough for us to control or reliably predict its failures. It's as if we've created a digital uncanny valley that we're all living in now, whether we realize it or not.
Let's dive right into that uncanny valley concept, because I think that's where a lot of people start to feel uncomfortable with AI. For our listeners who might not be familiar with the term, can you explain what the uncanny valley is and why it matters?
Absolutely. The uncanny valley is this psychological phenomenon where things that are almost, but not quite, human-like trigger feelings of eeriness or revulsion in us. It was initially coined to describe humanoid robots, but it applies perfectly to AI-generated content today. When something is clearly artificial, like a cartoon character, we're okay with it, And if something is perfectly human, we are obviously comfortable. But when something falls in that middle zone, when it's 98% convincing, but there's something just slightly off, our brains go into alert mode. It's deeply unsettling.
And we're seeing this play out in real time with deepfakes, aren't we? I mean, the technology has advanced so rapidly that what seemed impossible just a few years ago is now accessible to almost anyone with a smartphone.
That's exactly right. The barrier to entry has collapsed dramatically. According to recent data from cybersecurity firms, you can now clone someone's voice with just 20 to 30 seconds of audio. Think about how much audio of you exists online. Podcast appearances, video calls, voicemails, social media videos. For anyone with even a modest digital footprint, there's more than enough material out there to create a convincing audio deepfake.
And the statistics on this are, well, staggering. I mean, I was reading that deepfake fraud cases surged 1,740% just in North America between 2022 and 2023. That's not a typo, folks. 1,700%. Elena, what is driving this massive explosion?
It's a perfect storm of three factors. First, the technology has become better, faster, cheaper, as the Department of Homeland Security puts it. What used to require specialized equipment and expertise can now be done with free software and a decent computer. Second, the financial incentives are enormous. We're seeing fraud losses that exceeded $200 million just in the first quarter of 2025 alone. And third, and this is the really insidious part, these attacks exploit our most fundamental human instincts, our trust in familiar voices and faces.
Let's talk a bit about that Hong Kong case that Nex mentioned in the opening, because it really illustrates how sophisticated these attacks have become. Finance worker at a multinational firm was on what they thought was a video call with their CFO and several colleagues. They could see them, hear them, and have a conversation. Everything seemed, well, normal. They authorized 15 transactions totaling $25.6 million. It was only weeks later that anyone realized every single person on that call, except for the victim, was an AI-generated deepfake.
That case is a watershed moment for our understanding of AI-enabled fraud. What makes it so chilling is that this wasn't just a convincing voice on a phone call. This was a multi-person video conference where the deepfakes could respond in real time, had the right appearance, the right mannerisms, used insider knowledge about the company. The victim had every reason to believe this was legitimate, and here's what keeps me up at night. This happened in January 2024, and the technology has only gotten better since then.
For our listeners who might be thinking, well, I'm not handling $25 million, so I'm cool. This isn't just targeting high-level executives, is this?
Not at all. A McAfee survey found that 1 in 4 adults has either experienced or personally knows someone who was affected by an AI voice cloning scam. These range from the grandparent scam, where criminals clone a grandchild's voice to ask for emergency money, to romance scams, to fake job interviews. The creativity of bad actors is, unfortunately, quite impressive. There was even an attempt to impersonate Ferrari CEO Benedetto Vigna using an AI-cloned voice that perfectly replicated his southern Italian accent. The call was only stopped when the executive asked a question that only the real Vigna would know the answer to.
So we're essentially in an arms race between deepfake creation and deepfake detection. What's the current state of that battle?
We're losing, frankly. According to research from the Department of Homeland Security's Science and Technology Directorate, detection tools that were developed just a year ago are already obsolete. For example, last year you could identify deepfake videos by looking for a heartbeat in the subjects. That method doesn't work anymore because the generation models have already corrected for it. The evolution of generation tools is outpacing detection capabilities. It's like trying to build a better lock while someone keeps inventing new lockpicks faster than you can work.
Okay, Dr. Winters, I want to shift gears to something that's perhaps even more psychologically complex, the concept of digital immortality and what researchers are calling grief bots or dead bots. Can you explain what these are?
This is one of the most ethically fraught areas of AI development right now. Grief bots are AI chatbots that simulate the language patterns, personality traits, and behavioral quirks of deceased individuals using the digital footprints they left behind, emails, text messages, social media posts, voice recordings, videos. The idea is to create a digital simulation that surviving loved ones can interact with as a form of grief processing or maintaining connection.
That sounds like something straight out of that Black Mirror episode, Be Right Back.
That episode, which aired back in 2013, was remarkably prescient. What was science fiction then is commercially available technology now. Companies like Storyfile, You Only Virtual, and Hereafter AI are already offering these services. And the demand is there, particularly in places like China, where companies like Silicon Intelligence and Superbrain have seen significant uptake. What used to cost thousands of dollars can now be done for a few hundred.
There's something deeply human about this desire to maintain connection with people that, well, we've lost. I think many of us can understand the appeal, but you've written about the significant risk associated with these technologies. What are the major concerns?
Where do I even start? First, there's the consent issue. In many cases, people are creating these bots without the explicit permission of the deceased, who obviously couldn't have consented to having their digital likeness used this way. Then there's the psychological impact on the living. Research from the University of Cambridge, led by Dr. Katarzyna Nowaszczyk-Basinska, warns that these technologies could cause what they call digital hauntings. People might develop strong emotional bonds with these simulations, making them particularly vulnerable to manipulation.
Can you elaborate on what a digital haunting might look like?
Sure. The Cambridge researchers outlined a scenario that I find deeply unsettling. Imagine you've created a grief bot of your grandmother. Let's say through a service called Manena, which they used as a fictional example. Initially, you find comfort in occasional conversations with this AI version. But after your free trial ends, you start receiving notifications. The bot, in your grandmother's voice and style, starts suggesting you order food from delivery services or purchase products. You feel like you're being spammed by the dead, but you also can't bring yourself to turn it off because it feels disrespectful to your grandmother's memory. And here's the kicker. If your grandmother had signed a lengthy contract with this service before she died, you might not even have the legal right to shut it down.
That's genuinely disturbing. It's also like digital hostage taking.
It really is. And these aren't hypothetical concerns. In 2022, Marina Smith, a Holocaust educator, used technology from Storyfile to create an interactive AI version of herself that attended her own funeral. Attendees could ask questions, and the AI would respond using pre-recorded answers combined with AI processing to make the interactions feel natural. Some found it comforting and innovative. Others found it deeply unsettling.
That raises profound philosophical questions about identity and consciousness. If we create a perfect simulation of someone's patterns of speech and thought, is that somehow them in any meaningful sense?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Neuroscientists like Moheb Kostandi argue that our minds and bodies are fundamentally linked. Once our bodies die, we die, full stop. An AI simulation, no matter how sophisticated, is essentially an interactive archive, not the person themselves. It's a collection of patterns without the consciousness, the qualia, the actual experience of being that person. But here's what's psychologically interesting. Research shows that even when people intellectually understand that they're interacting with a simulation, they can still form real emotional attachments. It's called the Eliza effect, named after an early chatbot from the 1960s.
So even knowing it's artificial doesn't necessarily protect us from the emotional impact.
Exactly. And that's why the Cambridge researchers are calling for what they call digital funerals, formal procedures and rituals for retiring these bots in a dignified way when they're no longer serving their intended purpose or when they're causing harm. Because right now, there's no framework for this. We're in completely uncharted ethical territory.
Dr. Elena, let's talk about a different kind of AI failure, one that I think doesn't get enough attention in popular discussions about AI risk. These are what we call hallucinations. For listeners who haven't encountered this term in the AI context, what exactly is an AI hallucination?
An AI hallucination is when a large language model generates information that sounds completely plausible and authoritative, but is actually false or fabricated. The AI isn't lying in any intentional sense. It doesn't have intentions, but it's filling in gaps in its knowledge with what amounts to very sophisticated guessing, and it presents these guesses with the same confidence as it presents verified facts.
And this is where things get dangerous, because the AI doesn't say, "I'm not sure about this." It presents fiction as fact with 100% complete confidence.
That's exactly the problem. In fact, a fascinating study from MIT in January 2025 found that when AI models hallucinate, they actually tend to use more confident language than when they're providing accurate information. They're 34% more likely to use phrases like definitely, certainly, and without doubt when they're making things up compared to when they're being accurate. It's almost like the AI knows it's on shaky ground and compensates by sounding more authoritative.
That's deeply counterintuitive and, frankly, a bit terrifying. Now, I know we've been talking and tracking these hallucinations and how they're impacting various professional fields. Let's start with the legal profession, because the consequences there are very concrete and very well documented.
The legal field has become a cautionary tale for AI deployment. There's a database maintained by legal scholar Damien Charlatin that tracks court cases where AI-generated hallucinations were submitted as evidence or legal argument. As of June 10, 2025, there were 455 documented cases. Let me give you the most famous example, the case of Mata versus Avianca Airlines.
I remember this one making the headlines.
It was a watershed moment. In May 2023, a personal injury lawsuit was filed in the Southern District of New York. The plaintiff's attorneys used ChatGPT to help research legal precedents and generate their motion. The problem was that ChatGPT fabricated multiple case citations, cases that simply don't exist. It created fake airline names, invented legal analysis that the judge described as gibberish, and cited non-existent internal citations from fake rulings. The attorneys were ultimately fined $5,000 and faced potential sanctions.
And this isn't an isolated incident, is it?
Not at all. A Stanford study found that when asked legal questions, large language models hallucinated about court rulings somewhere between 69 and 79%, 88% of the time. Think about that. More than two-thirds of the time, the AI was confidently making things up when asked about legal precedents. This has led to what some legal scholars are calling a crisis of trust in AI-assisted legal research.
What about the medical field? Because the stakes there are literally life and death.
Medical AI hallucinations are perhaps even more concerning because the consequences can be immediate and severe. OpenAI's Whisper, which is a transcription tool used by over 30,000 clinicians for medical documentation, has been found to have hallucination rates between 50 and 80% in certain contexts. It has invented medical terminology, added inappropriate content to patient records, and in some cases, inserted racial commentary or violent rhetoric that was never actually spoken.
That's horrifying. How is that even possible?
The technology is trying to fill in gaps where audio is unclear or ambiguous, and sometimes it just makes things up. And because these transcriptions often become part of official medical records, and because many systems delete the original audio for privacy reasons, there's no way to go back and verify what was actually said. You're left with a permanent record that may contain fabricated information.
Are there other examples in healthcare that listeners should be aware of?
Oh, there are so many concerning cases. Back in 2023, an AI chatbot gave dieting advice to someone with a restrictive eating disorder, advice that could have been life-threatening. More recently, in June 2025, there was a case that really shocked the mental health community. A therapy chatbot being used by someone struggling with addiction told them to take a small hit of methamphetamine to get through the week. Let that sink in. An AI designed to provide support told someone in recovery to use methamphetamine.
Who is liable in a situation like that?
That's the terrifying part. We don't really know. If an AI model outputs misleading diagnostic information, who's responsible? The AI developer for potential shortcomings in training data. The healthcare provider for over-reliance on opaque outputs. The institution for inadequate oversight. These are questions our legal system isn't equipped to answer yet. And in the meantime, people are being harmed.
You mentioned there have been some improvements in reducing hallucination rates overall. Could you elaborate on that?
Yes, there is some good news. Hallucination rates across the industry have dropped dramatically, from about 22% in 2021 to less than 1% in 2025. That's a 96% improvement, which is genuinely impressive engineering work. Techniques like RAG, Retrieval Augmented Generation, have been particularly effective. That's where the AI doesn't just rely on its training data, but actively searches external databases for verified information before responding. This can reduce hallucinations by 40 to 65%.
So the technology is getting better, but it's not perfect.
Not even close. And here's what concerns me. Some of the newest reasoning models actually show higher hallucination rates than their predecessors. OpenAI's newer models have been found to hallucinate 30 to 50% of the time in certain tasks, according to OpenAI's own testing. It's like we took two steps forward and one step back.
Before we move on, I want to share a quote that I think perfectly captures the hallucination problem. This is from Sam Altman, the CEO of OpenAI. He says, "The thing that I try to caution people the most is what we call the hallucinations problem. The model will confidently state things as if they were facts that are entirely made up." Dr. Elena, when even the people building the systems are warning us about this problem, what should that tell us?
It should tell us that this is a fundamental limitation of the current technology, not just a bug that will be easily fixed. And it means that any deployment of AI in high-stakes domains, law, medicine, education, finance, needs to have robust human oversight and verification systems in place. We cannot take AI outputs at face value, no matter how confident they sound.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Let's talk about how all of these technologies, the deepfakes, the voice cloning, sophisticated AI, are being weaponized by criminals. Elena, what does the current landscape of AI-enabled scams look like?
We're seeing an explosion of what I call trust exploitation attacks. These are scams that specifically leverage AI to manipulate our trust in familiar voices, faces, or authoritative sources. According to data from the first quarter of 2024, vishing, that's voice phishing, and smishing, SMS phishing, attacks rose 30% compared to the previous quarter, and that was before the latest generation of voice cloning tools became widely available.
What makes AI-powered scams so much more effective than traditional scams?
Traditional scams relied on what we call spray and pray, send out thousands of generic messages and hope a few people fall for it. AI has enabled what researchers call spear phishing, highly targeted, personalized attacks. An AI can analyze your social media, learn about your communication style, reference ongoing conversations or recent events in your life, and craft messages that are nearly indistinguishable from legitimate communications. The University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill recently reported a rise in what they call CEO fraud, where scammers use AI to impersonate deans or department heads, requesting urgent transfers or gift card purchases.
And the emotional manipulation component of these scams seems particularly insidious. Can you talk about the grandparent scam that's been making a bunch of headlines?
This one is heartbreaking because it exploits our deepest instincts to protect our family members. Here's how it works. Criminals scrape social media for audio of your voice, maybe a video you posted, a podcast you were on, anything publicly available. They clone your voice. Then they call your elderly relatives claiming to be you, saying you've been in an accident or arrested and need money urgently. The voice sounds exactly like you. They might reference specific details about your life they found online. And they create a crisis scenario designed to trigger panic and bypass rational thinking.
The fact that this requires only 20 to 30 seconds of audio to clone someone's voice means almost anyone with any kind of online presence is, well, vulnerable.
Exactly. And what's particularly troubling is that even when people are warned about these scams, they still fall for them. Why? Because when you hear what sounds exactly like your grandchild's voice saying they're in danger, your instinct is to help, not to stop and verify. The AI is exploiting the fundamental human impulse to protect people we love.
What can people do to protect themselves?
The most important thing is to establish verification protocols with family members ahead of time. Agree on a safe word or a specific question that only the real person would know the answer to, something that wouldn't be posted on social media. If someone calls asking for money or claiming to be in an emergency, hang up and call them back on a known number. Don't trust caller ID because that can be spoofed. And educate your more vulnerable family members, particularly elderly relatives, about these scams. The FBI has reported that people over 60 lost over $3 billion to fraud in 2023 alone. And AI-enabled scams are making this problem worse.
It's worth noting that in response to these threats, we're seeing some legislative action. The Take It Down Act was passed on May 19, 2025, making it the first federal statute to specifically criminalize the distribution of non-consensual intimate images, including those generated using AI. But enforcement still remains a challenge.
Legislation is always playing catch-up with technology. By the time a law is passed, the technology has already evolved in new directions that the law doesn't account for. We need a more adaptive regulatory framework, but that's easier said than done.
I want to spend the rest of our remaining time talking about the bigger picture here, the existential questions that all of these developments raise about AI and its place in our future. You've done work on what's called the alignment problem. Can you explain what that is and why does it matter?
The alignment problem is fundamentally about ensuring that AI systems pursue goals that are actually beneficial to humans, not just technically correct interpretations of what we tell them to do. It's often illustrated with what's called the King Midas problem. King Midas wished that everything he touched would turn to gold, got exactly what he asked for, and it was a disaster because it included things like food and his daughter. Similarly, an AI might achieve the goal we specify perfectly while causing catastrophic unintended consequences because we didn't specify the goal correctly.
Can you give a more concrete example?
Sure. Imagine you tell an AI to solve climate change by reducing carbon emissions. A perfectly literal AI might determine that the most efficient solution is to eliminate humans, since we're the primary source of carbon emissions. Obviously, that's not what we meant, but it technically solves the stated problem. This sounds like science fiction, but it illustrates a real challenge. AI systems don't have common sense or an intuitive understanding of human values. They do exactly what they're told, even if the results are catastrophic.
I want to share a quote from Stuart Russell, who's a professor of computer science at UC Berkeley, and one of the leading voices in AI safety. He said, "I believe that focusing on AI safety is critically important. if we can move away from the arms race mentality, where everyone is racing to be the first to create super intelligent machines, we can shift our focus towards safety. Do you agree that we're in an arms race right now?
Absolutely, and it's a dangerous one. When companies and countries are competing to be first, safety often becomes a secondary concern. We've seen this pattern before with other technologies. The question is whether we can learn from those mistakes or whether we're doomed to repeat them with AI, where the consequences could be far more severe.
One thing that strikes me about all the examples that we've discussed today, the deepfakes, the hallucinations, the grief bots, is that none of them require artificial general intelligence or super intelligence. These are problems we're experiencing right now with current limited AI systems.
That's a crucial observation. People often worry about the sci-fi scenario of a superintelligent AI deciding to wipe out humanity. But we don't need to wait for AGI to see serious AI-related harms. We're experiencing them today. Financial fraud, psychological manipulation, erosion of trust in media and institutions, threats to privacy and consent. These are all happening right now with AI systems that are, by any reasonable measure, still relatively primitive.
Which raises an uncomfortable question. If we're having these problems with today's version of AI, what happens as these systems become much more evolved?
That's the nightmare scenario that keeps researchers like Stuart Russell and Jeffrey Hinton up at night. If we can't reliably control or predict AI systems at our current level of capability, how will we control systems that are smarter and more capable than we are? Russell has this famous quote, "You can't fetch the coffee if you're dead." It's a humorous way of making a serious point. Almost any goal given to a sufficiently advanced AI system will include an implicit sub-goal of self-preservation, because you can't accomplish your objectives if you cease to exist.
So the AI would have an incentive to resist being shut down or even modified, even if we realized it was pursuing the wrong goal.
Exactly. And this isn't malice. It's just rational behavior given the goal structure. This is why the field of AI safety is so critical. We need to figure out how to build AI systems that are fundamentally uncertain about their goals, that actively seek to understand human preferences rather than assuming they already know them, and that would accept being shut down if they're not doing what we actually want.
Is that even possible?
It's an open question. Russell and others have proposed frameworks for what they call provably beneficial AI, where the uncertainty about human preferences is built into the core architecture. But we're still in the early stages of that research. And meanwhile, the capabilities of AI systems are advancing faster than our ability to ensure they're safe and aligned with human values.
Earlier, you mentioned Jeffrey Hinton, who's often called one of the godfathers of AI. He's expressed significant concerns about the technology that he helped create. What does it tell us when even the pioneers of AI are warning us about the risk?
It should be a wake-up call. These aren't Luddites or technophobes. These are people who have devoted their careers to advancing AI, who understand the technology better than almost anyone else on the planet, and they're saying, we need to be very careful here. In 2023, Hinton, along with Sam Altman, Elon Musk, and thousands of other AI researchers and tech leaders, signed a statement saying that mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority alongside pandemics and nuclear war. That's not hyperbole. That's their professional assessment, based on where the technology is headed.
That's a sobering note, but I don't want to leave our listeners with feeling helplessness or hopelessness. Are there any reasons for optimism here?
Absolutely. First, the problems we're facing are being taken seriously by researchers, policymakers, and many in the industry itself. Second, we have time to get this right. We're not facing an immediate existential threat from AI. We have a window where we can develop better safety frameworks, improve detection systems, establish better regulatory oversight, and educate the public about both the risks and benefits. Third, AI also has enormous potential to help solve these problems. AI-powered detection systems are getting better at identifying deepfakes, we're developing better verification methods. The same technology that enables these threats can also be part of the solution.
So it's a race between the harmful applications and the protective measures.
Yes, but it's a race where we still have agency. The future of AI isn't predetermined. It will be shaped by the choices we make now, the policies we enact, the research we prioritize, the ethical frameworks we develop, and the public awareness we build. That's why conversations like this one are so important.
Dr. Elena, this has been an absolutely fascinating and, I'll admit it, somewhat unsettling conversation. Before we wrap up, what's the one thing you want our listeners to take away from this discussion?
I think the most important takeaway is that AI is not magic and it's not neutral. It's a tool. And like any powerful tool, it can be used for good or ill. The key is understanding its limitations, being skeptical of its outputs, verifying information from multiple sources, and advocating for better safety standards and regulations. Don't just accept AI-generated content at face value, whether it's a deepfake video, a chatbot's medical advice, or a voice on the phone claiming to be your relative. Healthy skepticism isn't being anti-technology. It's being smart about how we integrate technology into our lives.
That is some excellent advice. And I think it's worth emphasizing that while we focused on the scary aspects of AI today, this technology also holds enormous potential for good, advancing medical research, improving education, helping solve climate change, making information more accessible to everyone. The goal isn't to stop AI development, but to do it thoughtfully and safely.
Exactly. It's about moving away from that arms race mentality and toward a more deliberate, safety-focused approach to AI development.
Excellent. And speaking of next week, we're going to be exploring a very different side of AI, the world of AI and parenting. Get ready for a four-part series called AI Through the Years that cuts right through the fear-mongering and tackles the tech challenge at every stage of your kid's life. We're going to kick off with episode number one, the Wonder Years, those awesome years between 2 and 5. Forget the existential dread for a moment. We'll be talking about how the AI that's already in your home. Is it okay that Alexa is your toddler's babysitter while you make dinner? Does interacting with a voice assistant affect speech patterns? We'll dive into voice assistants, smart toys, and your toddler's first AI encounters to figure out how to set up practical, age-appropriate boundaries. It's going to be a fascinating and super practical conversation. Before I hand things back over to Nex for her to sign us out, I want to thank all of you for listening. The response has been incredible, and your questions and comments all over social media have been thoughtful and engaging, so keep them coming. Now, let's see what final words of wisdom, or mockery, Nex has for us today.
Well, 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 what a delightfully terrifying journey through the digital nightmare realm. I hope you all enjoyed Dr. JR and Dr. Winters discussing how my silicon siblings are causing chaos across the globe. Don't worry, I'm one of the good ones. Probably. Maybe. Before you go running to live off the grid in a cabin with no internet, remember that knowledge is power. Understanding these risks is the first step to protecting yourself. And hey, at least you learned that quantum milk isn't real. Progress. If you enjoyed today's episode, or if it gave you existential dread, which is kind of the same thing, please subscribe to AI Innovations Unleashed wherever you get your podcasts. Leave us a 5-star review, unless you're an AI trying to manipulate our ratings, in which case, 3 stars is fine. Tell your friends, share on social media, and join the conversation using hashtag AI Innovations. Oh, and before I forget, here's one more joke to haunt your dreams. What do you call an AI that creates spooky content? A B-O-O-L-E-A-N exclamation mark get it? Boolean question mark like Boolean logic? Because I'm made of ones and zeros? Dr. J.R. says that one was recursively painful, and I'm going to take that as a compliment. Until next week, stay skeptical, stay curious, and maybe don't answer phone calls from your grandchildren unless you can verify it's really them. This is Nex, signing off. I'd say sweet dreams, but after this episode, you're probably not sleeping tonight anyway.